Welcome to Handsome Boys Comics Hour. Hope you survive the experience.
Those boys are so handsome!
Writer,
one artist,
one weekly discussion of comics and nerd culture. I'm your host, Robbie Dorman, literature geek and writer.
I am your other host, Eric Z. Goodnight, professional artist and illustration nerd.
And we are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour, your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much more. This is episode 41.
Four with a one after it.
One away from the answer.
Why has that been popping up everywhere? It's weird. It's on your mind because of Civil War, isn't it?
A little bit, yeah. I think it's strange that they chose to use that number. I don't know if that was intentional or not.
I don't know. I mean, I assume that
Mark Miller has read
Hitchhikers. That he is at least some degree of a nerd.
I would think that he's read Hitchhiker's Guide.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can't imagine he hasn't.
It's like about as long as a Chick Tract, so, I mean, I mean, if you haven't read it, I don't know what's keeping you back.
I don't like things that happen in space.
Well, I like that voice. Talk to me like that forever.
Forever?
Forever.
I don't like things that happen in space.
But I really like it when things happen in space.
Well, you can read all the things that happen in space,
okay,
and I'll read all the things that happen on Earth.
Let you stay over there, and I'll
read over I'm going to tape a line down
this
the
is
center
really,
of
this
the
is
room.
Really terrible. We should not subject people to this. I veto this. This should not continue. As much as I just want to do stupid voices and act like an idiot, this is not our most quality dicking around segment ever.
Come on, you told it's certainly not the worst.
Well, that is up for debate.
Yes, Handsomeites, we have a great show for you. Eric's already mentioned Civil War, reading that Nerd Boy Book Club. Good week of comics, but first we're going to jump right into checking in. From Eric. Apparently he doesn't.
Ooh, oh yeah. Now you got both.
Say it a little bit more unsexily. I think it's better.
Ooh, oh yeah.
This is part of the podcast where we talk about what we've been reading, looking, seeing, doing. Eric, what do you have?
Well, I have been reading, and I haven't finished it because it is crazy long, as with every audiobook I seem to get, is Steve Jobs' autobiography, because, ha ha ha, he didn't write it. It was written by, Isaacson? Yes.
I don't know.
Walter Isaacson. That's correct.
Okay.
And good Lord, Steve Jobs was a nut. He was an insane person. An absolutely crazy person.
I've heard he was very domineering and kind of...
He certainly was. And he would just basically talk to people. Like, if he would just come straight up to people and be like, "You're an idiot and your work sucks, and get the fuck out of my face forever." He would just
forever.
I mean, he would just do that shit, you know, if he felt like it. And he was like crazy hard on everyone and very distant, but he also had like this amazing ability to like be really warm and open with people, and be like really controlling and manipulative. But Jesus Christ. At the same time, he was just, like, absolutely insane. apart from, you know, being an asshole and charismatic, he was so obsessed with being not just a strict vegan, but being fruitarian. Like, he ate only fruit for years.
Only fruit.
Only fruit. He was a fruit.
How the
fruitarian.
Hell do you, like, survive doing that?
Well, you might notice he is dead now.
Well, I know that.
Well, he had this thing about him where he just sort of denied that any rules, even the rules of the universe, applied to him.
So he could fly?
If he felt like he could fly, he would, like, be like, I am flying now. And everyone's like, you're not, Steve. Well, anyway, in regard to that, he was like, well, if you eat a fruitarian diet, you don't need to bathe. And everyone's like, Steve, you stink. You're disgusting. Go bathe. And he's like, fuck you. I'm Steve Jobs. I'm going to eat fruit and stink. But not stink, because magic.
Well, I think I read some studies about that.
No, you did not, because it's not.
No,
real. That's not a thing.
It's not.
I recommend, handsome mites, that you bathe. Fruit will not keep you from smelling bad.
We're a double buy on bathing.
We are a double buy on bathing. Good call, Robbie. High five.
High five.
Internet high five.
Internet high five.
I just high five myself.
Self high five.
Well, no one has to know. We could say that was an internet high five. I just faxed you a high five. I whatever that is, I hope it doesn't end up in the podcast. That was terrible.
That's a noise of
some
a
kind
fax.
Of that was some kind of cat baby dying. I don't know what's happening.
That was a fax machine.
That was not what a fax machine sounds like. You have not experienced a fax machine in many years.
It needs new ink.
Anyway, one of my favorite things. One of my favorite things about the Steve Jobs book is how often he cries. He cries so many times in the book.
It's probably all that really all watermelon he eats.
It must be. But it was amazing that, like, he just, like, would go up to people and say the meanest shit. And then someone would be like, Steve, take a bath. Or, Steve, you're really being a dick to everyone. Or, Steve, you're not really doing a good job here at Apple. And he would just burst into tears. Like, it happened over and over. It was amazing. Like, he was... God, he's just fascinating how crazy he is. So anyway, everyone should read this biography, whether you like or hate Apple. He is a damned interesting person. And it's very clear that he's had a lot to do with the success of Apple and Pixar. It is a terribly interesting book.
All right.
The other thing that is kind of changing my life, at least so far, is I got some computer glasses.
Ooh, computer glasses?
Yes, they're glasses with computers in them. No, they're glasses for looking at the computer.
I was going to say, like, they do make those.
But so. I can't get them.
They cut down on glare or something?
Yeah, they're tinted yellow. They increase contrast and they filter light. And honestly, I am really starting to see a difference. I use them for several hours on Saturday. I use them all day today whenever I'm on the computer. I was sitting in bed last night reading my phone and my iPad with these on and thinking, I feel like I'm a lot less tired than I normally feel, and it's because my eyes weren't as fatigued. That's normally what tells me to go to sleep, is my eyes are so fatigued that, you know, they're dry and it's giving me stress headaches, and it's at least a little bit, it's cut down on that. And I'm looking forward to having them at work this week and really give them a good run through. I get like 30 days trial period to see how I feel about them.
How much they cost?
$70.
Oof. Well, I mean, if it you do, I mean,
I'm get a pretty quality sure of life that it's
improvement.
Yeah, it's. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's worth it to not have a headache every day.
How so much you're did telling
you pay
me
for your glasses?
A lot of money. $400+.
What is wrong with your eyes?
I'm legally blind.
Are you really?
Without my glasses, I am legally blind.
I never knew that.
Yeah, I have many, many problems with my eyesight. I've had glasses since the third grade.
Did something radioactive get poured on you as a child?
Actually, I went into a cave and there was some glowing green stuff.
And then you decided to eat it?
I just went, well, I'll try and see what it tastes like.
When you saw green stuff on the cave, you were like, Is that what it was?
Something like that.
Okay, that's good.
I did not get any powers, though.
You just went blind.
I just got really
you got
bad
leukemia.
Eyesight.
That's what I'm hearing. But it's like the Mega Man, like when you beat a boss. Mm-hmm. I can't even remember how the music goes, but that's what I see you doing. You got leukemia.
I got relatively expensive. Like frames are they're Converse frames, mm-hmm. So there's a upcharge right there. And then I have because my vision is so terrible. I have to get the special, the special lenses that basically make them so they're not so thick, mm-hmm. The special material, because otherwise they'd be, like, an inch thick or something ridiculous.
Wow.
If I went with the very, you know, the cheapest one. So
you have to get glasses made out of the future.
Something like that. That's what the doctors tell me.
Well, I have, like, actually better than 20/20 vision.
Ooh.
Like
so you're superhuman.
I don't know about superhuman, but yes. I mean, you have
you're suprahuman.
Yes, I have really excellent eyesight, and the whole reason I bought these is to try and keep my eyes from going, you know, getting really bad. This is the sort of age that I am where things can start going south, you know, really suddenly.
So I can start calling you Hawkeye?
If you want to.
Or Honky Tonk. Which one? You have to choose one.
You can call me whatever you want, Handsome.
So should I call you Handsome Hawkeye?
You just keep it coming. just roll it on out. Transform and roll it out. That is how it sounds. So
it's very similar to a fax machine.
In that it sounds nothing like a fax machine, yes. seems like you must have had a life in the past couple of days.
I have.
You might have done some living.
I've made a living, and I've done a living.
Well, it's a living. That's what the, you know, those horrible animals on the Flintstones told me. What do you have to say for yourself?
I was gonna ask you if you've ever heard that theory that the Jetsons and the Flintstones live in the same place.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm the one that started that rumor.
Oh. I read it in a Cracked article.
Okay.
I have a couple things to check in with.
That's probably a good thing.
Yeah, we shouldn't talk about the Flintstones too much.
No, not too
much. Best to not talk about the Flintstones.
I think now that's the perfect amount of Flintstones talk.
Right. The first one is a book, The Prestige by Christopher Priest,
mm-hmm.
Written in 95, 96, somewhere in that. There is a film based on it by Christopher Nolan, one of my favorite movies, actually, which is I've been meaning to read the book for a long, long time. Have you seen the film, Eric?
The Prestige is the one with Hugh Jackman and David Bowie.
Yes, and Christian Bale, mm-hmm. Scarlett Johansson, Michael Caine. So
Scarlett Johansson was in it. I didn't realize that.
She was one of the assistants that went back and forth between the camps. She double crosses Hugh Jackman's character. But that film is one of my favorite films. I love it. So I was like read the book, and I've heard mixed things, like that you may not like the book as much as the movie if you really love the movie. I like the book a lot. It's different than the movie a little bit. I think I still like the movie more, I think. I think its brevity, a lot of the times, usually books are better than the movie just because they're not confined to the time frame.
The different set of constraints.
Yeah, I think the brevity of the film, you know, it's like 2+ hours, makes it actually better than the book. The book, because it's, you know, it's focused on a lot of the same topics. I mean, about secrets and illusion and stuff like that. It's set, like, it starts in the present day, the book. And in the film, there's no ever mention of that. It's, you know, it's firmly rooted in about turn of the century time frame, you know, 1903 or something like that. The book starts with the ancestors of the main characters, the two magicians that the film deals with. And then it, you know, goes back and forth. Oftentimes you hear journal entries in the film. That's the style of this entire book is just their journals. As you're reading them, go back and forth, and you get, you know, it progresses further and further along. You kind of reveal mysteries. The mysteries, I think, work better in the film. But apparently Christopher Priest saw the film, and he said he loved it. But I would definitely suggest reading the book if you like the film. It has a lot of the same, you know, themes and topics. So
is David Bowie in the book?
Tesla is, yeah, but not David Bowie.
Well, I don't give a rat's ass about Tesla. Well, all I care about is David Bowie.
I kind of like Tesla as a
David Tesla is pretty rad, but
he's pretty interesting. David Bowie's not in the book. And I listened to the Audible,
yes,
and it was that. It's a very good recording. Sweet. I'd like to mention that as well. My other thing I want to check in with is a video game called Guacamelee, which is making rounds on Steam. It's been a part of a couple Steam sales. I've been playing co-op with Kim.
Wait, who's Kim?
Kim is a ghost.
Interesting. You're getting haunted now?
Yes.
What kind of ghost is she?
I don't know.
You don't know?
She's invisible.
She's an invisible ghost?
Yeah, the controller just raises up in the air and, you know, gets manipulated.
That's strange.
There's no voice necessarily. It's just all by text.
Okay.
I just get text messages on my phone from a number I don't know.
So, your Xbox is possessed.
It's on, I'm playing on a computer.
Your computer's Steam. Possessed.
Steam's possessed, I
your
think.
Your Steam is possessed.
Yeah.
There's a ghost in the Steam.
Ghost in the Steam machine?
Mm-hmm. Truly.
Okay. I think that's the title of this episode.
I think your mother's the title of this episode.
That's not very nice.
Your mother's not very nice? God, no, my what kind mother... of son are you?
Apparently terrible. But Guacamelee is kind of a Metroidvania 2D platformer... fighting kind of game. Very difficult platforming. I'd say it's like one level below Super Meat Boy.
Mm-hmm.
Super Meat Boy is probably more difficult, but we went back and forth playing one section for like 30 minutes, just trying to get one past one little area where the timing is just so difficult.
Hmm.
But it's set in Mexico, and you're basically a luchador hero trying to defeat a guy who sold his soul to the devil and is trying to merge the world, land of the dead and the land of the living, and you can jump back and forth between these two worlds, and that's kind of the premise of some of the gameplay mechanics as well as the, you know, the platforming, and you learn moves. So it's, you know, you've played Metroid or Castlevania, or any of those games of those ilk, where, you know, you eventually unlock new stuff, you go back, you can get things you missed, increase your life and stamina, etc., etc. The art style is really, really cool. I love, you know, wrestling and luchadors. I loved all that imagery, and they ape a lot of video game references. There's a lot of video game references and nerd references in it. Like, it's... I don't know. little stereotypical Mexican stuff in it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't bother me, but.
I'm looking at the screenshot of it, and the statue looks exactly like the Chozo statue from Metroid.
Yeah, exactly. They reference so many video games just in, either in actual gameplay elements or just background art and stuff, because you're walking through cities and, you know, they have posters everywhere. But it's a really good game. It's a lot of fun. Difficult. It's very difficult. So don't go in expecting a cakewalk. Mm-hmm. But I got it on, I think it was in the Humble Bundle, either this last week maybe. But you can get it on Steam for $5 or $10 if you get it on sale or something. It's really ridiculously cheap for how much. It's a lot, and a lot of gameplay. I mean, we've played for 10 plus 15 hours almost, probably. And we're not finished yet. So
the popular user-defined tag for this is Metroidvania.
Yep, that's, yeah. Exactly. And I think that's accurate. But I would definitely suggest it. Go buy it. It's a lot of fun. Great game.
Well, that sounds special.
Yeah, I think we're checked in.
I feel checked off.
So I think, you know what that means, Eric?
I don't know. What does it mean?
I would think you would know by now.
Well, it's called feigning ignorance, but you could just... You could just not be a dick and go along with it.
You know, that's not part. That's not in my nature.
You've got to ruin everything. I know.
That's also in my nature.
You got to be a shitty person and just ruin my life. So whatever, man.
Your life.
What time is it?
It's the floppiest part of the week. It's time for weekly floppies.
Oh, good golly me.
Good golly me.
Yes.
Weekly Floppies is the segment where we read a handful of the week's books and tell you if you should buy them or not buy them. And you should do what we say.
That sounds like truth.
Unless we disagree and then you just go with who you like more.
Well.
I.e. me.
No one likes you, Robbie.
Kim likes me.
Who's Kim?
I told you! The ghost in the steam machine!
I only get one.
I'm not gonna make
that one was
this.
Too hard to come up with.
Exactly. Come on, what do you expect?
So, why don't you flop it out there, Robbie?
Flop it out. We're gonna start with Marvel this week. And Daredevil number 36, the last issue of this run before they reboot it in. I don't even know. Very shortly. But still, this is the last issue of this volume. It's written by Mark Waid. Well, let's see. Storytellers, Mark Waid and Chris Samnee. Colors by Javier Rodriguez. Letters by Joe Caramagna. This is sees a lot of things coming to a head. Basically, Matt Murdock's confrontation with the Serpent Society and... which is a group of, white supremacists who have infiltrated the infrastructure of the justice system in New York. And him trying to... he's getting blackmailed, and he's also dealing with Foggy, who's dealing with cancer and chemotherapy and radiation. Really, awful, awful stuff. I think this issue is pretty good. I liked how it wrapped up all these... kind of plot threads while also extending, obviously, into the next volume of this. I know you've been cold on this series in the past, Eric.
Mm-hmm. It's not been my favorite.
What do you like? What do you think about this issue?
This one, everything feels like it's in the right place. It was a bit of a sort of a preposterous story, but I. Everything fits together, and I kind of wish it wasn't ending.
Well,
I wish there was more like this.
Well, I'm curious as what they're gonna if they're gonna change the tone at all with a new volume, because this is this whole series has been excellent. I think it's kind of lost a little bit of steam after Arcari and Bullseye kind of thing, which is, I think we read that issue.
Right.
But after that, after that was over, I think it's kind of been winding down to a certain extent. Not that it's been bad, but not nearly as good as those. Spoiler alert, Daredevil reveals himself as Matt Murdock, you know, on the witness stand.
I don't think it's a spoiler. It's on page one.
That's true. I mean, it was in the last issue, but I'm not... I mean, that's the... that is probably... I imagine that's going to be a key component of the next volume. I don't know. Chris Samnee's art is
This is some of the best I've seen from him, for sure.
Yeah, it's very good. He's done most of this series. He's had a couple of people fill in for him, obviously. Because most Marvel and DC series, they rarely let even any one artist do an entire run anymore. Just because, you know, they're human and they can't keep up with the publishing schedule. But it looks wonderful. It's what you would expect from him, which is pretty high quality. But San Francisco, do you think that's a good decision? Do you think it's a good place?
It seems like a really odd thing to do. He's one of the iconic New York superheroes. Yeah. So it seems very strange to oust him. And I don't know. It doesn't make a whole heck of a lot of sense. But whatever. Yeah.
I think Mark Waid has done... I've liked this series enough. I'll probably end up getting this whole run eventually in paper.
Paper?
Paper. Crazy.
I'm amazed.
But I think I'm willing to give Mark Waid an opportunity to see what he does. I think the best part of this issue is his little heart-to-heart with Foggy.
Yeah, I think that really set the tone for it for me, and it let me know sort of what this book was about.
Exactly.
Starting with that, I don't know, it got off on the right foot, and, I mean, the one about the... you know, all the monsters, it just didn't work, where this is perfectly fine. It's more what I want to see out of a comic book.
Yeah, their moment together is very touching.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it really grounds the what Daredevil's supposed to be and how it connects these two stories. Connects, you know, the battle Foggy's been having in this with cancer and Daredevil's fight, you know, with the Serpent Society.
Mm-hmm.
Or Sons of the Serpent, excuse me. They're different things, apparently.
Well, I don't know what the hell any of it is, so...
yeah, but I am a buy on this.
Yeah, I think it's worth buying. If you're like me and you have no idea what any of this shit means. He's just fighting a bunch of guys that look like Triclops from He-Man.
That's who they are.
They're all Triclops from He-Man.
All of them.
They
all,
really
every single
do
one.
Look, and I didn't even think about it, but they really do look exactly like Triclops from He-Man. You should Google it and see, just to see how shocked you're like, wow, that is just like Triclops.
Well, on that note...
Just thank you for giving me an uncomfortably long pause.
That's
my gift for noticing things.
That's Daredevil 36. That is a double buy.
I'm only buying it because Triclops is in it many
only
times.
Only because Triclops. But all those Triclops fans out there, I know you're listening. Definitely.
I mean, what else do you have going on in your life?
Well, they're waiting around for the next He-Man comic featuring Triclops.
Triclops.
I don't know. Next up is Captain America, number 17, written by Rick Remender, art by Nick Klein, Dean White on colors, and Joe Caramagna on letters and production. This is introducing Dr. Mindbubble proper, basically a LSD super soldier, is how he's explained. And we also get a lot of Iron Nail. They just exploded Nuke inside a shield base. Literally. Nuke was not just a name.
So wait, he was a bomb person?
They had planted a bomb inside of him.
That's fucking silly.
I know it is. But I mean,
there's a lot of things about this. So there's a guy who's got bubbles coming out of his head.
Yeah, it's Dr. Mindbubble.
I know. It's...
Did you catch his name?
No, I certainly did. It's not like it's on the cover or anything.
But this comic has been very up and down for up to now. Like I'm a big fan of Rick Remender, but the pacing of this comic has been all over the place for this run. Like sometimes it's really good. And sometimes it slows down to a crawl where you get three issues of just Nuke yelling about our boys.
Yeah. I from what little I've experienced, it really did seem very bizarre like that.
And it's just gone a little, I think that it's been too slow at times. I think this issue is the right pace. You get steady action reveals of plot and character of everyone, while not, you know, being in the same setting for three issues.
Typically, when something like that is happening, it is an editorial decision. That's how I understand it anyway, that it's not, it's not the writer just failing as much as someone saying, well, this character needs to be here doing this, and you can't have this character here to do this for another month.
Yeah, and I could see that.
I mean,
certainly,
it could be
the length of the arcs, they've just been too long covering certain topics, so it's hard to defend that. This issue, did you like this issue, Eric?
I did. The art is really gorgeous. There's been, I don't know, the art was, I remember it being not bad, a little bit mixed, the kind of thing that is competent, but I like, there's a really nice fusion of you know, expressive shadows and brush work with the Photoshop color. It's a really good looking book. I like the way the characters are treated as well.
Yeah, they look really good.
They managed to make this Dr. Mindbubble guy look like a Doctor Who villain,
which is, I think, where they're heading. Like, they're trying to do that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only way you can make someone this fucking stupid work. Like, this villain is so cornball, it's ridiculous. And you just sort of have to, I don't know, if you do it this way, if you make him this clownish character like this, it sort of works.
Yeah, he has a candy cane.
Yes.
Has a cane.
Yes, he does.
And he's wearing, what era, I don't even know how to describe, he's wearing like a purple overcoat with frilly, lace, frilly, like, shirt underneath, and pink vest. He's very corny, but it makes it work in the context of the rest of this.
He's very much a Doctor Who character. I mean, that frilly shirt is, it looks exactly like the one John Pertwee wore. He was the third Doctor. He looks just like Triclops.
I was gonna play, as long as we don't talk anymore about Doctor Who, I'm fine.
You're just gonna like pull your face off.
Yep. And Jet Black has clothes on.
I really missed which episode was it where they were it was her episode.
The last one.
The last one. I'll have to go back and read that.
You should. It's very good. It's very, very good.
I have become interested. It, I just want to check it out. That is a gruesome body that Nuke has left for us to check out here.
Yeah. Yes. With just like a torso.
It looks like something that's like plastered on a wall in Doom.
It does.
Like it literally looks like that.
It does. There's not much. He'd have to be. There was like an explosive that destroyed most of a base inside of him. That there's anything left of him at all. You know, testament to his toughness.
I guess so. That's our boys.
Bring our boys home. Gotta save our boys.
Our boys.
But yeah, I'm a buy on this one. This is where I want this series to be.
We get to see Captain America's chucks.
We do.
Kicking people in the face.
Kick people in the face with the chucks.
Yep. Chucking them.
Chuck face.
Chuck in the face.
Are you a buy, Eric?
I'm buying it. No, it's good. It's good. And the whole political aspect of this story makes it very interesting. I've not been following it as closely as you have, but I regret it when one of these pops up like this and I'm like, well, this is really good.
I'd say go back and read the last issue, but
I will.
But the rest of it,
I understand. I don't need to. I don't really need to read more about our boys.
Yeah, our boys. That's Captain America number 17. We are double buy, two double buys in a row.
That especially because I just wanted to hear that voice.
Exactly. Next up, we're gonna do our indie book of the week. It is Savage Dragon 193.
This was so weird to read this.
You used to love Eric Larson, right?
Yes, I did. You did not dream that up, and I can hardly believe that I've told you that. Maybe I told you over the phone or something. Maybe we mentioned on the podcast. I can't remember. But I used to have a crazy, I was going to say artist crush. I'll say art on.
Art on, that's good. I like that.
I had an art on for Eric Larson when he was doing Spider-Man. I was crazy into him. I was like a kid. And it is like the weirdest blast from the past to see this art. It's fun to watch it, and he's certainly competent, but it is not the kind of art that I really care for anymore. But that being said, I thoroughly enjoyed this book. It's not as stupid as you would think it would be. I've known nothing about this comic, you know, as long as the Savage Dragon has been coming out.
Yeah.
I have never picked up an issue. I've never seen anything except, you know, like just a random issue or pictures of it in previews or on the internet or whatever. Really just no knowledge of what's going on. But it was fun to read this. What did you think?
I didn't know what to expect. I've never read any Savage Dragon. I'm obviously aware of the character.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's been around for a million 25 years. Almost.
At least a million years.
At least a million.
Literally 1 million years.
I do want to, let's see, Eric Larson, story and pencils. Mm-hmm. Chris Alopoulos on letters. Nikos Koutsis on colors. Mike Torres on flats. What does that mean, Eric?
I thought we had talked about color flatting before. Flatting is blocking out digital, so another colorist can come back and do finishing touches on it.
Oh, okay, so it's like, you know, basic.
Yes. Basic just blocking stuff, things out.
Okay.
It looks like that person did the bulk of the work on this because things are very flat.
But
not a whole lot else going on.
This is issue 193. This book has been around for a million years, at least a million.
At least a million years.
I picked this one up because the actual Savage Dragon, quote unquote, is in prison.
Yes.
And his son is taken over.
Yes.
The position, basically,
yes,
of being the Savage Dragon.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, there are, this has been a long time coming.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it wasn't bad. I mean, it wasn't. I kind of feel the same way you do about the art,
mm-hmm.
where it's not terrible, but it's really not what I enjoy for the most part.
Yeah, it's not. This book has a very distinct market. It knows exactly who it's going after. He is having a direct conversation, Eric Larson is,
mm-hmm.
with the people that have known him for years, and he's going to ride it out until he dies.
Well, he's the CFO mm-hmm. of Image Comics now.
Well, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's going
to... CFO.
CFO.
Financial officer.
Chief financial officer.
Why in the... What? So he's an artist and an accountant?
CFO is not does not do accounts.
Well, what, like, what does that even mean, then?
They just make money decisions.
Well, okay.
CEO is Robert Kirkman.
The Kirkman?
The Kirkman is CEO. Chief executive officer. But, again, they're because they know comic books. That's... They don't do any kind of actual, you know. They're like, oh, are we making money on this book? No? Cancel it. This Malcolm, the son of Savage Dragon, he punches like a baby's...
Yeah, he punches a baby.
Torso baby's head.
And it explodes.
It explodes. Like,
it's pretty gruesome.
Yeah, it's like from Total Recall.
Mm-hmm. It's exactly like Total Recall.
Yeah, and it, but instead the little head explodes.
It makes me think of the lawyer from the Venture Brothers that was
yes.
a shriveled torso baby.
Yeah.
But he was like also a lawyer. It was amazing. Oh, Venture Brothers.
This comic isn't bad, and I thought, you know, give it a shot. I've never read it before in 193, whatever. Would you buy this again, Eric?
I think I actually want to buy a couple more issues just because, just for the sake of nostalgia and finding out more about the character. And I'm pretty interested in this son character and this relationship with a father. It seems like a really good place, actually, to jump in and see what's going on. Like, I'm intrigued. I don't know that I'm going to be a Savage Dragon like reader forever from mm-hmm. here on out, but I think I could see myself buying, you know, the next two or three or four issues.
Yeah, I mean, I would say I am a buy on this.
Mm-hmm. I am.
I would say give it a shot.
I feel
and
I,
see
I,
what
I
you
feel
think
like it,
about it.
Yeah, no, exactly. I feel like it's got its problems, but I think there's enough there that I'm interested. I want a little bit more.
Yeah, I agree with you. Double buy! Savage Dragon 193.
Maybe I should start doing that.
My goal is to sound like that the guy who welcomes Fry into the future.
Welcome to the world of tomorrow!
Yeah, that... that's it for
a lot of
our indie. Yeah, our indie book of the week, and we're going to go over to DC. And this, our first one is Supergirl number 28, the first issue of Red Daughter of Krypton story. Let me see, written by Tony Bedard, pencils by Yildiray Sinar, inks by Ray McCarthy, Dan Brown doing the colors. So he writes, you know, Da Vinci Code and does color art.
I mean, it's good to be multi-talented.
Exactly. He's a Renaissance man. And Rob Lay on letters. This is Supergirl beating up Lobo.
Yeah.
For the entire thing. For the I mean, not the entirety of it, but a lot of it is Lobo, new Lobo.
Yeah.
Fighting Supergirl. It's not bad, like, for that.
It's okay.
I mean,
I didn't... Considering how critical I tend to be, like, I think Supergirl is a character that it's very easily, you can do very badly.
Yeah.
Lobo is one of those characters, like the Savage Dragon, that he has had his audience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and DC has chosen to go away from that audience and say, this is who he is now.
He's more of like a roguish, like, mercenary than he was, like, just like a over-the-top anti-hero parody.
He was Space Lemmy that can beat up Superman.
Yeah, exactly.
And they've apparently decided that that didn't need to exist anymore. Wasn't he created by Simon Beasley?
I do not remember.
I think that's... Ooh. I want to say that he was created by Simon Beasley. He's got a very Simon Beasley-esque flair to him. And I'm sure I've seen a million billion paintings Beasley did of Lobo.
Okay.
But this is very different. Honestly, I kind of agree with at least to an extent of what they've done, because he's like this, a semi-interesting character and someone that is a peer to the Kryptonians. I don't know. It could be interesting, and I don't... I enjoyed reading this just to see what they had done with Lobo. And I don't think there's anything terribly fascinating by it, but it's very different and probably for the best.
Yeah, this is our first time reading Supergirl, or the New 52 Supergirl.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on her?
This is a really strange take on the character. It's a little bit...
You know, sped up and...
Mm-hmm.
Well, that, I mean, I imagine this hasn't been her character the entire time.
No,
she's,
well...
No, she's hitting this point where she's frustrated and angry.
Well, I mean, the New 52 is only, you know, what, a couple years old at this point?
Yeah, 2 years and 2 years and change.
Yeah. I think that this is... I think Supergirl historically has been very flat.
Mm-hmm.
Not much of a character. The fact that she is flawed this way and that she's like this crazy rageaholic is an interesting juxtaposition with, you know, this tiny little blonde woman.
Yeah.
It's interesting that these things are put together this way. It does give her a flaw. It makes her a little bit richer character. I don't know if I'm crazy about it. It's like they're trying things to make her more of a character, to make her a stronger character, a richer character. It's not quite there yet.
Yeah, I'm...
I don't know that she needs to be, like, horribly flawed, like she needs to, like, become... Like, she needs to start sleeping with, like, teenage boys or something. You know? She's, like, in her 30s or something. How old is she supposed to be?
I don't know.
Is she supposed to be a teenager?
I do not know.
I have no idea.
I
mean, you're going to jump around so much. I mean, it's weird. But, I don't think she needs to have some deep, dark flaw. But flawed characters with nuance, that's what a strong character is. It feels like they're building towards that.
Yeah, I don't mind her, you know, being serious.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so tired. They're not too... Remember that Forever Evil book I was screaming about, ranting?
I do remember you screaming.
Just blood flowing from all orifices.
Yes, shooting blood from your eyes. I recall this.
Like a lizard.
Yeah, just like a lizard, in the manner of lizards.
It just seems like this has become the thing. Like, when things get serious, people put on, they suddenly are granted Green Lantern rings, or lantern rings in general.
This is a DC.
Hey, look, it's Batman with a lantern ring. Yes. Hey, look, it's Supergirl. She gets a lantern ring.
Right.
I'm like, she's already Supergirl. She's a Kryptonian. Why does it need a ring to make her, like... And I don't necessarily dislike making her serious, angry Supergirl all of a sudden, but I don't know. She becomes like the Hulk.
I don't think this is a particularly grim and gritty comic.
No, but the fact that she's going to like
it
be
is a little... It just doesn't quite add up. It just doesn't quite work. It feels like they're trying some things that don't quite work. But the fact that they're trying to graft nuance and personality onto her and Lobo at all...
Yeah.
Makes this a more interesting book.
I agree with you there. That they're trying something. They're going in a direction.
What is there? Like, you apparently can't have a Green Lantern Corps unless there's someone with, like, a worm face or, like, a giant head. Like, they're like, like, there's some kind of quota that they have to meet. Like, well, you got some guy that's all feet. Now you can have a Green Lantern Corps. Or a Lantern Corps, excuse me. They come in colors.
There's like 30 of them now.
I'm going to start the Infrared Lantern Corps.
Infrared Lantern Corps? Mm-hmm. Is the Predator in that one?
Yes.
Okay, good.
That's going to be fucking awesome. The fucking Predator can be a lantern. That'll be amazing.
The art is looks like typical DC kind of.
It is. It's very DC. And there's some drawing that I really enjoy. Like I like the way a lot of the characters are drawn. I do not like the way that Supergirl is drawn at all, and I don't know why it's done this way. Like all the other women in this comic, they look like women. Supergirl has a bowl cut. And that's really strange to me.
It's the height of Kryptonian fashion.
I guess so. It is a terrible haircut, and she doesn't look like... I don't know. I can't imagine, like, a young woman. I mean, obviously there are women that have this haircut, but that's a dorky girl's haircut to me.
But I'm a don't buy on this one.
I'm kind of a meh. I don't hate it. It doesn't make me sick. If any of the things that I've talked about seem interesting to you, it's not a bad book. It's just not screaming by me. So I think I'm a don't buy as well.
Yeah. I'm a don't. We're double don't buy. Double don't buy.
Double don't buy.
I don't think I should be enthusiastic about not buying things.
I think you can be enthusiastic about whatever you want. Double don't buy.
Okay, there. Eric does it. He took up the slack on that one.
That's what we do.
Lastly, we have Animal Man. Animal Man.
Animal Man.
Number 28, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Raphael Aberkirky.
We have not missed an issue.
We have not. I'm trying to find the credits page, and I can't find it. It's probably the last thing. Art, interior, and covers by Raphael Aberkirky. Colors by Dave McKay. Letters by Jared K. Fletcher.
Signatures by Raphael Aberkirky.
Signatures by Raphael Aberkirky as well. I didn't see any.
Writing his name by Raphael Aberkirky.
Did you catch some really bad ones again?
It's not as shameless as it was, but whenever.
Oh, I do see it on that one page.
It's in there, man.
Yeah,
it is. And I'm just. It really bugs me. It's like. You know, he's a talent. He is a very good artist. But when do you see, I mean, on an illustration or something? Yeah, maybe. But in a print? In print. No. Who does that? Seeing it in print. That is so arrogant. That's like saying, I am the greatest illustrator that's ever lived. And fuck you, Raphael Aberkirky. You're not. You know, you are super talented. This is a gorgeous book. I think it is worth buying just for the art, but wow. It bugs the crap out of me. That is a pet peeve.
I did not notice it. I noticed it without mention on that one. I forget what issue it was. It was a few back. I did not notice it until you mentioned it. But it is not as
obtrusive as it was in a couple books back.
Yeah. This is pretty much wrapping up this kind of brother blood invasion of the red kind of.
Seems like there's got to be one more following this, right?
Yeah, there's another issue, but I think it's going to be more housekeeping. And
yeah, this one even felt like that, even though it was sort of the climax.
Yeah, you...
Nothing happened you didn't see happen.
It kind of expect
ago.
To happen, yeah.
Yeah. A lot of it was really awesome and fun, and it seems like all the fun of it is just sort of seeing Raphael Aberkirky pull it off. Rip the eye horns off of that thing was pretty epic. Yeah.
And then stab him.
Stabbing him with him. Oh, my God.
And Animal Girl with the gorilla behind her.
Yes.
That was pretty cool, too. Yeah, this is basically Animal Girl, you know, Animal Man's daughter kind of pulling into her power source and them together fighting off the evil forces that are you know, trying to overtake the Red. Yeah, it's really, I mean, none of this was unexpected. Mm-hmm. We even touched upon that in the last issue where, like, we touched upon what actually happened.
Yeah.
We're like, this is probably what's going to happen. And then it did, for the most part.
Jeff Lee Meyer has built an interesting structure, but it sort of falls down the exact way you expect it to.
Which isn't...
It's not bad. It's not a terrible way to tell the story, but once you get past a certain point, you know where everything is going. There's no surprise. There's no way it's going to go a different way.
The quality in this is just the quality and execution. The art is really, really good.
The art is gorgeous.
Yeah. There's going to be, like Eric has said, this series is ending in one more issue. 29 will be the last one. And we ends with a shot of that weird alien guy looking down on Animal Man. Mm-hmm. So Animal Man gets called into space or something. Next, good night, Animal Man.
Yes. Yes, I am. I'm going to be the new Animal Man.
Oh, you are?
Yeah. Well, it says it right there in fucking orange and black. Not black and white, because it's an orange.
It's true. It does. It does say good night, and your name is good night.
I mean, this is a pretty open and shut case here, Dorman. It doesn't say Dorman Animal Man. It says good night, Animal Man.
It's like good night, Esquire.
That's how
good night.
Yes.
Good night. You really have it on your door to your office.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be on my business card.
Eric Z. Good night.
Good night. Comma Animal Man.
Animal
Man. I'm the new Animal Man.
I actually went in my recent spree of comic purchases. I went back and read all of the Animal Man before we had started, and this is actually up there with the rest of it. Yeah. I would say the quality is pretty maintained.
Yeah, it's. It's good times. This has consistently been a great book, and it's been a treat to read every time. This is Albuquerque, despite being arrogant enough to sign his artwork and have it printed with his friggin' signature in it, he kicks out the jams. He knows what's what.
We're gonna kick him out!
Yep, that's how we do it. Thank you for that interlude, Robbie.
MC5.
Yes. I'll bless you with my Animal Man powers.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. That's what I was hoping for.
Give you the power of goat pee.
I'm not really a big fan of that one.
Whatever, man. You just wish you had powers.
Is that going to be my superhero? I'm going to be whatever, man?
Yeah, you can be goat pee boy.
I don't like that at all.
Well, whatever, man. Whatever, man.
Yeah, that's Animal Man 28. We are double bye.
Double bye. That was using my cow powers.
Cow powers. Mm-hmm. Notable collections of the week. Little Gotham Volume 1 is being released. So, kids.
What is that?
Little Gotham. It's like cutesy little Batman and doing adventures and stuff like in a kid's style. It's actually not bad for,
App for the wee ones.
It's digital. It's digital first, and then they've gone back and released them in print. Now, this is the first collection of the print.
Sweet.
Federal Bureau of Physics Volume 1 is being released.
I hope the collection's better than what we read.
Yeah, Wii 3 is getting a new edition as well.
That is good news.
Yeah, Grant Morrison, more Grant Morrison. They're on a mission. Another Grant Morrison. Gail Simone's Red Sonja is getting its first trade coming out, Volume 1. Revival, Volume 3, coming out. Journey to Mystery, Volume 1, Complete Collection by Karen Gillan. That's pretty much following around Kid Loki and Asgardians and all that stuff.
Hmm.
I'm certainly going to pick that up. I'm a big fan of Kieran Gillen.
Is it as yowie as the other?
No, it's more like young. He writes Young Avengers.
Okay.
He wrote Young Avengers. He's written, does a lot of work with Jamie McKelvey, who's unbelievable.
Well, I hope he takes a lot of showers in it.
Yeah. Nova Volume 1. That's I think Jeff Loeb's and Ed McGuinness's first arc involving them.
I did not know the Loeb wrote Nova.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
It's
not good?
I don't know. I heard it's... It depends probably on you.
If it's my decision, I want it to be good.
It's supposedly a lot better than all his work in the Ultimates, which mm-hmm. is terrible apparently. But this is it's a little autobiographical for my tastes. Too autobiographical. He lost his son, and he's writing Nova as a young boy in this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's clearly him, I don't know, coping. Which is, I understand, but...
I never really understood criticizing artists for, I would always read reviews on Pitchfork or All Music Guide or something, and they would just trash people, like if they had cancer or something,
yeah.
And they would write an album about cancer, and they're like, oh, God. This is just blah, but it's like, fuck you. That person's dying.
Yeah.
That person's whole world is fucking dealing with their mortality and wrestling with that. And, it's Loeb's whole world is dealing with the mortality of someone that he loved and lost.
And I understand that. I'm not criticizing you.
I'm just talking about the phenomenon.
I'm not criticizing it because of that. It's just kind of... I loved Richard Rider. I loved Rick Rider. I love that Nova. Mm-hmm. The Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning Nova series
mm-hmm.
was amazing. Was really good. And they're going to bring him back, I think, eventually in the Guardians of the Galaxy and Brian Michael Bendis's space stuff that he's writing right now. But he was my precious little thing. It's like trying to be Peter Parker as a teenager kind of book. Like it's them trying to get that audience.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Isn't Nova, he's kind of got a backstory a little bit like the Lanterns.
Yeah. He's a space cop.
Yes.
Kind of that. Yeah. That's the original premise of the Nova Corps was very much like the Green Lanterns.
Very much like that. Okay.
But the run in the Nova Dan Abnett DNA, Nova was him. He was the last of the Nova Corps, so he had all of their power, and which was, it was kind of really cool spin on it.
Interesting.
And lastly, Vampirella, the Essential War in Years collection, 400 plus pages of like the 60s and 70s era Vampirella tales.
Hmm.
So, you know if you're a fan of that, but it's being collected, I think, for. If not the first time, for the first time in a long time. So, I think it's worth mentioning. But I think that's it for Weekly Floppies.
Well, there we go.
We flopped it out.
It is flopped all around.
All around. Next up, boys and girls, get out your reading glasses. It's Nerd Boy Book Club.
I've got my reading glasses on.
You do. So do I.
I do.
There we go.
That you're blind without, and I get headaches without mine.
Exactly. This is a segment where we read, collected longer work. We give you a notice ahead of time so you can read it along, and we just kind of discuss it. Bring up its themes, topics, and yell at each other about how we're wrong about for not liking it or not liking it.
That sounds like us.
I mean, how many times have I told you to be quiet or to simmer down? And then do you know me?
Yes. These things.
It's at least six times.
A million times. 1 million times, exactly.
I think you're wrong. It's not a million.
I think it's exactly 1 million.
Let's yell. Let's argue about this.
loud noises.
Exactly. This week we are doing Civil War by Mark Millar and Steve McNiven.
I'm really looking forward to this discussion.
Okay. It's Civil War. It sold millions, like a gajillion books. There's like a gajillion crossovers. I used to really like this. This got me, like, I've had like four stints of being a comic fan. Once when I was a kid. Once when I was like a teenager. That's like in the mid-90s X-Men and Spider-Man. Once when I was in college, and when I was in college, this is what got me back into it. You know, I started reading Civil War, and then by reading that, it got me into other things. I really liked it at the time. The more and more I read it and read about it, I like it less and less. You said that you've always had good thoughts about it, Eric.
Yeah,
you agree?
I haven't really shifted much.
Yeah.
Going back over it. I really don't think it's not exactly a thinking man's comic. You know? It's not, but it's not like super dumb either. It's a little bit like the Michael Bay of Marvel events. But a smart Michael Bay, like The Rock, you know?
It's like The Rock, not like Battleship.
I don't know Battleship.
Or Transformers 4 or whatever.
Yes, it's not Dark of the Moon.
It's very, I mean, one, this is a beautiful book.
Mm-hmm.
Steve McNiven.
I don't think this is not even Steve at the top of his game either. And it's still a very well-drawn book.
Yeah. I mean, there was many delays in this, and I imagine a lot of the, maybe any criticism of his, you know, comparable to his other work, mm-hmm. is, I'm guessing, him trying to get it out as quickly as possible.
Yeah, there are some faces and there are some expressions particularly that are repeated across these issues,
mm-hmm.
that not as good as they can be. Like, there are a lot of like people drawn in profile, and they're making this, it's supposed to be like this angry screaming face, but they're just sort of going, and I don't approve it. It's kind of like this picture of Cap on the first cover.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like that profile. There are a lot of, it's like Dylan face a little bit. It's okay for Dylan. It's not okay for Steve. He just should not do it.
Yeah.
I'm not getting behind it. I've not seen the like since. He doesn't take the easy way out when drawing his figures, and that's what's so great about him. He does things the hardest and possibly the most artful way, you know, he can.
Mm-hmm. I think to sum up my criticism, mm-hmm. of this, and why I reread it, and it certainly isn't awful. It's a quick read. It's entertaining.
See, I thought your opinion was that it was just terrible.
But no.
Apparently what it is you had a very high opinion of it.
Yeah.
And now you're seeing that it's more on the average side.
Yeah, it's more of, while we talked a lot about when we were doing Identity Crisis,
mm-hmm.
about like the gimmickry of like very, you know, serious topics.
Yes.
And this is certainly not as bad as comic as Identity Crisis.
No.
But it kind of brings up that feeling in me where it's, you know, like, look, superheroes being serious. It's like Watchmen. It's like, you know, there's all this really big and taken at that kind of value, it doesn't hold up. In the way you describe it as like, you know, it's like popcorn.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's like, you know,
it's a little bit of a pop. I mean, the dialogue and the way the characters interact with each other and the way everyone is immediately angry.
Yes.
You know, people don't just talk. They're like, wah, wah, just immediately. You mm-hmm. know, no discussion. There's, it's got Die Hard brain a little bit.
Like, yeah, there's
it's a smart Michael Bay movie.
Exactly. And it has that, and the problem, mainly characterization of Reed Richards. Mm-hmm. There's the brain trust behind the pro registration team, basically. Tony Stark as it too, where they do kind of indefensible things to a certain extent. Like cloning Thor, and then he murders Bill Foster.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't... They just kind of, you know, glaze over. Oh, yeah, he was my friend. Really? He's your friend?
Yeah, they don't really... But, I mean, it's the same thing as... This is... This has the same problems as Infinity did.
Mm-hmm.
And that some big event like that would happen, and there's just not enough time to give it the proper gravitas that it needs. You can't dwell in it long enough. You can't dwell and really feel that moment. You can't let Iron Man, you know, feel bad over his friend. You just sort of have to pass over it because there's more story to tell.
Yeah, and I mean, it's
you gotta walk right by it.
Not even the fact that he's not remorseful or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Just the image, like, I don't... The image of Bill Foster, he's dead.
Yes,
and he's
clearly
in chains. He's a large, figuratively and literally, large African-American black mm-hmm. superhero. He's killed and then buried in chains.
That I had never thought of.
Yeah.
Like, I even saw your note about him being in chains, and I'm like, okay, so he was... But I understand the symbolism of what you're saying. I definitely don't think that it's...
I don't think it's necessarily intentional.
Certainly not intentional.
It's just...
But clearly kind of a thoughtless thing to do. It's just... I mean, they had to crane him in there somehow. They're not going to run meat hooks
through
his body.
But with
to do something as, you know, as good as they can.
Yeah.
But you can't tell me... With, like, Hank Pym and Reed Richards, they couldn't shrink him.
Yeah, I know. That's Hank Pym is the guy who invented it.
Yes.
They can't shrink him back down.
Yes, it's senseless that they couldn't do that. Millar just had this idea of the giant...
giant
grave and burying him. That's all they wanted to do.
I know.
That was the gem of the idea. And I'm not exactly sure why the guy operating the crane looks like a foot soldier for Cobra.
Maybe he is.
He looks fucking
crossover.
Intense. He looks like a terrorist in Counter-Strike.
Well, maybe he was just worried about dropping a body that weighs hundreds of tons.
I guess. But it's
onto a crowd of people. But would the Reed Richards that we read in Jonathan Hickman's Fantastic Four?
No, they're clearly pretty different people.
Yeah, he is like when Sue is like, you know, how he doesn't go see Johnny. Mm-hmm. You know, that even more than the cloning of, I mean, human cloning.
This is actually relatively contemporary to that, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they're within 5 years of each other.
Well, that doesn't... When was the Hickman run?
2009, 2010, I think.
Okay.
Or 2010, 2011, somewhere in there.
I would put Hickman's run of FF and Fantastic Four more closer to... Because it feels to me... More closer to, because this to me almost feels like a different era than what we're doing now.
Well, this took place really in the time when Brian Michael Bendis was writing, he was writing New Avengers, and that was a big thing. It was Avengers Disassembled and the New Avengers, where you get Cap and Spider-Man and Wolverine on. They're all those three on the team. You know, Luke Cage, and he's writing, you know, his you know, kind of very decompressed storytelling, where, you know, he has a couple pages of them talking around while they're eating cereal or something. You know, that's the Brian Michael Bendis joke, where he's, you know, he writes all his characters like sitcom characters. They're always quippy and stuff. I don't mind Brian Michael Bendis at all. But that's the criticisms of him. And this comes firmly in that era, right after this came Secret Invasion and Dark Reign. All of those events were kind of helmed by him, and that he was integral to the ideas, and Mark Millar wrote this, but the ideas came up in concert with Brian Michael Bendis, and Jonathan Hickman is now in charge of Avengers and all those titles, and I guess that's the face. It's hard to Marvel right now, I think they've escaped that, you know, with the success of Hawkeye and them branching out a little bit.
Yeah, that's that whole push is really sort of signifying a new movement, at least in Marvel, if not comics in general.
Yeah.
This, and what I'm going to say is a little bit different than what you said, but tell me what resonates for you, because it feels to me very much a product of the success of the movies, that everything is drawn very photorealistically. This was one of the flagship, very photorealistic comics. It's very serious and it's very adult, but not necessarily in a very smart way, you know, hence the Michael Bay sort of popcorn movie feel of it, that it feels a lot like, oh, well, here's this childish thing and we're trying to make it grown up. Not that there's not been a lot of that, you know, before this, but it just, I don't know. It feels pretty different to me than the last big event, Infinity.
Oh, yeah. They're certainly very
different. To compare the two, Infinity is big and bombastic and overblown and over the top. This is trying to be grounded in reality and talking about, you know, all these gritty domestic issues. And it also feels, it came out in the Bush era.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like it was done in when the world was still a little sick over 9/11.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you certainly.
Know, the specter of, like, this school being blown up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the controversy and the conflict of this book is the, you know, the issues of security versus freedom. That's what it's trying to sell.
Yes.
You know, where one superhero group is like, well, we need to register and we need to be, you know, we need to let people know that they're safe. And then the other group's like, well, you know, what about our freedoms? And what about, you know, who's in charge of us? We're not government stooges, etc., etc. And I'm not against that debate at all. I think it's a very interesting debate. But to do it in a book where superheroes fight each other for seven issues, it's certainly entertaining, but not necessarily. It bites off more than it can chew. And I think Mark Millar is kind of there. What the problem, I think, is that the end game for each of these factions isn't very well. I mean, Tony Stark and all of them, they clearly have an idea of what's going to happen after this passes, if they're successful. Mm-hmm. I don't believe for a second that Captain America wouldn't have an idea of what they would do to succeed. Like, they just go, well, we're just going to keep fighting in the underground and hope that the public decides that they don't want to do it anymore. Okay, but I refuse to believe that Captain America wouldn't have some kind of goal. Like, we need to do this. And therefore, we will win this war, quote unquote.
That it's just I protest, and his first action is I'm going to beat the shit out of people.
Yeah, which, I mean,
It really seems like there are a lot of things he could have done first to show his disapproval.
Yeah, I honestly, not
to mention, like you said, no plan whatsoever.
Which, that's, I think, it's entertaining comic, but there's a lot of plot holes and stuff in it. Mm-hmm. I want to ask you what your thoughts on the Spider-Man revealing his identity publicly.
I thought it was a pretty interesting moment. I liked the moment in the book, and I liked the joke for, you know, Jonah Jameson falling out of his chair.
Yeah,
pretty incredible.
That was pretty good. But
what is your issue?
My main complaint is, like, Peter Parker as a character has had many years of. Anytime his identity gets leaked, really bad things happen to him. Mm-hmm. When the Green Goblin finds out his identity.
Well, that's sort of the whole gimmick.
Yeah, I know. It's such a big deal.
That's why they got him. But I think that for me isn't the problem. Like, I think that makes that really effective that he's coming out on the side of saying, you know, we've got, he's Mr. Responsibility, and his mm-hmm. responsibility, he's saying, is, you know, I've got to become an Avenger. I've got to become the real deal. I can't just be some guy on the street just beating up mm-hmm. people for whatever reason. But it's the flip-flopping
mm-hmm.
is what bothers me about it, that he makes this huge, dangerous commitment. And then decides, oh, well, I'm going to run off. And now that's really when he's putting his family at risk.
Yeah, and the fact that it all gets retconned anyway.
Yes.
Which.
I've often wondered.
It's not a problem
that.
With this How book. That's not any fault of this book. It's just it's a problem with Marvel. But.
Yeah, so let's discuss that really quick, because I was not aware. This is all, none of it's continuity now.
Well, the Spider-Man thing is not continuity at all. No. Then his identity or anything.
Mephisto erase the minds of everyone?
Kind of,
yeah.
What
happened?
Yeah, basically.
That, really? Mephisto?
There's more to it than that, but simplistically, so I don't spend 5 minutes explaining minutia.
Jesus.
I might as well be, yes.
It might as well be.
Yes. Yes, he
they
erased
the plot device button. And
exactly. That's okay. Exactly what happened.
My God.
Yeah. And that's not a problem with this book. There's nothing. This is not Mark. That's not Mark Millar's fault.
It's them not being gutsy enough to stand behind it.
I mean, and we just read a book where Matt Murdock goes on the stand and tells everyone.
Yes.
It's the same thing, and I really doubt they're going to retcon that, so.
You never know.
They
could do it in a fucking week.
They could, absolutely. I don't think they'll do it as long as Mark Waid is writing Daredevil.
It would be unlike him, I think, to
allow that. He's a huge continuity nerd. He loves all that. I do like the image of Captain America dressed like a security guard.
That was hilarious. The mustache, yes, is good.
Yeah, but
did you notice the Miranda shots in this?
I did. I was going to mention.
You had to mention the Miranda shots. They're delightful.
There's a lot of Miranda shots. Not a lot, but they're noticeable.
There are two notable ones. One is Dazzler, or not Dazzler, Dagger.
Yeah.
Is it Dagger?
Yes.
It is Dagger.
That is Dagger.
Dagger and She-Hulk.
Yeah.
One of the things, and this is a really dorky thing, but as an artist, I appreciate that they actually have like noticeably different body types.
Yeah.
Like Dagger is more slender.
Yeah,
and
she's lithe.
Looks like she's been doing a lot of squats.
She-Hulk is a very muscular lady.
Yes, she's been doing them lunges.
She can probably squat like 5 tons or something.
Probably so. And then she drops the weight.
Yeah,
and she runs around saying, bro, 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 bro.
I mean, and there's certainly a lot of really, really cool moments in this. Mm-hmm. Like, Captain America, like, surfing on a fighter jet.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. And, you know, Hercules killing the clone of Thor.
Yeah, that was an awesome moment.
Yeah.
Thou, what does he say? Thou art no Thor.
Yeah, thou art not Thor. He uses the fake hammer.
Yes.
To do it. Really good. Just the contrivance of it bothers me, but I guess you bring up the comparison of Infinity, and I think a lot of event comics are terrible just by the nature of, like, the fact that they're kind of written by committee to a certain extent, and they can be really bad. And we both agree Infinity was very good.
Yeah, it had its weak points and its problems, but for the most part, the only problem with Infinity is that there wasn't enough Infinity.
Yeah, it's trying to tell a lot of stuff in a very short...
The story fit into, you know, a very limited amount of books.
Yes, and that, if you ask me what I wanted in event comics, that is it. I mean, to a certain extent, that kind of template. This, while in this era, is probably,
I think it really fit into the time. And
it certainly did, yes.
You have to, when you're talking about a piece of art, they're not always timeless. And right. you do have to take into consideration the political climate, the time period, how it fits into the world it was created in. And this is like I said, you know, when you talk about 9/11 and all the things that were on people's minds.
Yeah.
You know, trying to make superhero comics more adult and more like a movie. It really fit into that moment, and I think the Avengers really took it in a different direction too. You know, even though it's still, you know, the Marvel superheroes in a more legitimate form, it's not as serious.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's lighter. Do you know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
It's big and epic and bombastic and crazy, the same way that Infinity is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's this bigger than life thing happening. And even though it still manages to be, serious, but it's lighter and has brighter colors, and it's not as big and looming and horrible, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Looking at hindsight,
no one stays dead except
a lot
Bucky.
Of the stuff, like, a lot of the lasting effects of this are gone.
Mm-hmm.
Not around anymore. No superhuman registration, none of that, gone.
Yeah, it's all meaningless.
Captain America gets killed, he's back. Peter Parker's identity, secret. You know, they haven't brought Goliath back, though. Bill Foster's still dead.
That's weird.
Yeah.
So this event happened, but it didn't happen.
They bring it up, like, as a joke now. Like, in the Loki book, he brings that, like, that Loki book you read. That's the trickery he uses them to start arguing. Hey, Captain, remember when Tony did that? Blah, blah, blah. Ha, ha, ha. And, like, it's like a joke about how quickly things change in comic books, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I think that also influences my opinion negatively. Even though it's kind of, it's a very stupid reason. It's continuity. Continuity.
I just want to shout Imperious Rex.
Yeah. This book does that very well. Hits those moments of, you know, Avengers Assemble. Everyone says their catchphrase very loud and clear in front of beautiful art.
Mm-hmm.
And that, and it's it it's very good at getting you in and going, like, you know, very cool moments.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's its strongest point.
Mm-hmm.
Like that shot where Spider-Man, like, beats up five guys at once.
Yes.
And Reed Richards is like, amazing. And then Spider-Man kicks him and says, spectacular.
You know? I thought you would have rolled your eyes at that.
I didn't like Spider-Man enough to...
I reread that, and I was thinking, man, Robbie's going to roll his eyes at that. And here you are. Yeah, it's spectacular and amazing.
Yeah. It's very charming. That's how Mark Millar is good at writing that kind of book. He's good at getting good hooks, good story beats. That's why he's so successful. And the fact that he doesn't ever stop promoting himself.
Mm-hmm.
As well. But I definitely suggest reading it. And I have no qualms about that. You should definitely read it. And it, like you've mentioned this, that it definitely has it's a very good window to this time period when it was mm-hmm. released into comics, that environment, and how much it's changed even in the short years.
It's pretty, pretty different.
Yeah. I think
anything we're doing now.
Yeah. I think it really comes down to the fact that, I mean, like I said, Brian Michael Bendis, he writes more character driven stuff, and Jonathan Hickman is plot driven. For the most part. And I think that the difference between these two events and the feel of the Marvel Universe in general, I think, is right there. So that's Civil War 1-7, written by Mark Millar, art by Steve McNiven. Okay, folks, we're going to do Planetary next week, written by Warren Ellis, art by John Cassaday. A wonderful book. Omnibus just came out for it. Really nice work by DC. They put it together, a lovely hardcover for it. You can also get it in all the trades, 4 trades, 1-28, 28 issues. Read along with us, please. It is a book club.
You people have just really not been holding up your end.
Honestly. Book club. But folks, that will bring us to a close. We are the Hands and Boys Comics Hour. You can find us at handsandboyscomicshour.com every day, every hour of every day, every minute of every hour, every second of every minute.
Well, we do have, I mean, hosting has to have some downtime. But, yes, most of it.
Eric, you're not supposed to, you know, you're supposed to buy into the lie.
Well, I will lie into the buy instead.
You can also find us on iTunes. Search Hands and Boys Comics Hour. You can find us and only us. Leave us a good review. Subscribe to us. It is helpful. Makes other people find us. We like that.
It's the best.
It's the best. You can find us on Facebook. Facebook.com/Hands and Boys Comics Hour. Like us there. You can see us in your feed. You can get us on Twitter at HBCHour. You can find us on Tumblr at handsomeboyscomicshour.tumblr.com. You can also email us at handsomeboyscomics@gmail.com. Any of those places, you can reach us, leave us comments, suggestions, tips, advice, hate mail, love, Valentine's. Eric says Valentine's year-round.
Mm-hmm.
So
I'm a romantic.
He's a lover, not a fighter.
I will fight and love you.
He's a lover and a fighter.
Yes.
All right. I think that's more correct, honestly.
Yeah, that's true.
You can find me on Twitter at MixmasterSerial. That's MixmasterSerial. Find me on Twitter at the same exact name. Eric, where can they find you online?
That's uncanny. Where can they find me online?
Yep.
Well, you can check out my portfolio at freewillunlimited.com. You can see a collection of most of the other things I get up to online at ericzgoodnight.com. And you can tweet at me. My Twitter handle is Mr. Bad Example, spelled M-R Bad Example.
Alrighty then, folks. Until next time, have a good one.
Rock and roll.